This is a blessing, very powerful blessing from a Bulgarian heart and Bulgarian soul. And get ready for some Bulgarian. Сурва, сурва година, весела година, червена ябълка в градина, златен клас на нива, пълна къща с сланина и куприна, живот и здраве до година, до година, до амина. Амин.
Amen. And what did you say in English?
And I said roughly the following. Let this year be very fruitful. Let we have red apples on the trees. Let we have golden wheat in the fields. Silk and bacon in our home. But let us all be very healthy. Be healthy.
Stefan Bozadjev from Bulgaria. Blagodarya.
Blagodarya. Thank you, Rick.
The world's smallest country is big on the wish list of many travelers from all over the globe. The Vatican City, while tiny in acreage, is the spiritual capital of a billion Roman Catholics worldwide. And in about 100 acres, it packs some of the most significant sites of the Christian world. Be warned, people who visit without a plan might think that Rome's nickname as the Eternal City actually refers to the wait in line for the visiting of the Sistine Chapel. But if you're well organized, it can be a beautiful experience. Now, for the latest in visiting both the Basilica of St. Peter and the amazing Vatican Museum with the Sistine Chapel, we're joined today by tour guides Nina Bernardo and Susanna Perrocchini. Nina and Susanna, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for asking us to be part of this. It's nice to be here, Rick.
What a delight to be able to have both of you here in our studio, and you guys essentially earn your living in Rome, taking groups around to see all of the wonders of culture that Rome has to offer, and a big part of that is the Vatican. Nina, when you think about the Vatican, as I said, it's a little country. What are the dimensions of what you'll see as a visitor?
Well, when you go there, you're going to see a cluster of buildings that's surrounded by some walls. And inside those walls is about 109 acres, so not very big. And the main things that you want to see in there are obviously St. Peter's Basilica and then the Vatican Museums. So the Vatican Museums are some of the largest museums in all of the world, with over 50 galleries filled with art.
And you've got this wall, which is impressive. It's a formidable wall.
It is a formidable wall.
I mean, it was real back when it was an independent country surrounded by enemies. They needed this wall.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's even the escape path.
Right, the secret passageway. Yeah. Yeah, so the Pope could get out.
But you have the biggest church in Christendom in many measures, and you've got, of course, the great museum. And you can't just... Generally, the tourists have to walk literally around the country to get to the Vatican Museum.
Exactly.
And then you've got a beautiful square in front of the Basilica.
Right. With this
Piazza San Pietro.
Piazza San Pietro, right. And from there, you've got this view all the way down to the river and Castel Sant'Angelo.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So the first stop for most people, I would think, is the Basilica. And the Basilica is either a touristic attraction or it's the destination of pilgrims. Now, as a tour guide, how do you prepare your travelers to respect the Vatican as they visit this greatest church in Christendom?
Well, first of all, they have to respect a very strict dress code.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to have their shoulders and knees covered. And that is important because it might be a silly thing to add, but they check, especially if they go in the good season, with the weather that is so hot, they are going to be checked one by one. So they have to pass through security. The second thing is to remind people that is the holy place, one of the holiest of all places in Christendom. So they have to be respectful. And the fact that they have to be online sometimes for, let's say, half an hour to an hour, sometimes under the sun, under the rain, it doesn't make it less holy.
That's right. And you're standing in line not to give money, but you're standing in line for security.
Exactly.
So you stand in line, and if you want to miss that, you can go very early or very late.
Yes, I would suggest always the very early.
I would suggest skipping breakfast almost and
getting
there crack of dawn. It's open early for worship, and if you go in a worshipful way, you can go right through security, and you are in beautiful tranquility in that greatest church.
That is absolutely the best moment to go in there, because understanding then the space and the scale on you with not thousands of other people in there is just a wow moment for sure.
And then I always think it's important to not look at it through the sensibilities of 21st century perspective and practicality and so on, but put yourself back 500 years. This was the most glorious building people in Europe could build to praise God. And that's what they wanted to do. And if you see it on those terms, it really can be mind-boggling. And I think from a tourism point of view, it's important to put yourself in a respectful Roman Catholic frame of mind rather than looking at it from a cynical kind of way, and to enjoy it on its terms. Nina, what are some of the highlights for you as a teacher and a tour guide when you take people through St. Peter's?
The first thing that comes to mind is obviously Michelangelo's Pietà, which when you walk through the door is right there to your right. It's behind bulletproof glass, but it is nonetheless an amazing work of art. And so just if you go early, you actually get to stand right in front of it.
Yeah.
And when you think about how young he was when he sculpted something that's so full of emotion, it's amazing. And then I think second for me would definitely be the baldacchino, so the canopy, the bronze canopy that's over the altar. And then you stand under there and you understand the scale of this, and you're underneath that dome that's kind of lifting you up to the light.
And you're looking up there at this glorious dome with the sun rays streaming through, and you realize that was the tallest dome that had ever been built at that time, taller than a football field on end, designed by Michelangelo.
Yes.
And you got that baldacchino that kind of connects it with the altar, which is right above St. Peter's tomb. And people have been worshiping there for nearly 2,000 years. I mean, to give people a little sense of the spiritual gravitas of that is really something.
Well, this is exactly the experience that they wanted you to have, is to have this mystical experience with the divine through the art.
Yeah.
And when you walk in there, you say, wow, and you have this emotional response to it.
And ahead, you're right there at St. Peter's tomb. So St. Peter is down below you and above you in 6-foot tall letters in the mosaics on the edge of the dome. It says in Latin, "Tu es Petrus, you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church," as if the Roman Catholic Church had to make a reminder of what is the primacy of Peter in their brand of Christianity. You know,
yes.
It was said that the church on earth will be built upon St. Peter, and this literally is. And then you look up at the altar in the apse, and you see it's called the cathedra?
The cathedra.
Cathedra. The chair of the bishop.
Yes.
And to think the pope was the first bishop.
Yeah.
That goes all the way back to Peter. And then you got those alabaster starburst.
Yeah. It's amazing when the rays of light are coming in there.
Instead of having normal glass, they just sliced alabaster really thin. Now, of all the virtues to consider when visiting Vatican City, patience may be the most important one, as our tour guides, Susanna Perucchini and Nina Bernardo, remind us right now on Travel with Rick Steves. They're helping us plan a visit to St. Peter's Basilica and the Vatican Museums during the busy Jubilee year of 2025 that Pope Francis declared. We have links to our guests with the notes for this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Now, I think it's kind of funny because there's two different kind of tourists or visitors. You know, there's tourists that are just going to get a selfie, and there are people that are going there because they're going to worship there. There's sort of a balcony up towards the apse, and you can go past that if you're going to, quote, worship. You don't have to be a Christian to go through that. You can go up there, and you can sit down, and you can attend a mass respectfully. And that gives you a whole different sensibility of the experience, I would say.
Absolutely, it does. And then it's also interesting to watch the people who are obviously there for religious reasons. They're there for spiritual reasons. Or you see the nuns and the priests who are there from all corners of the earth, and you know they've come there to make their pilgrimage.
Now, as a tourist, you can go to the top of the dome, and that is quite an experience.
It is.
Have you been to the top?
Yes, I've been a couple of times. And actually, I always say to people, if you have to go, put yourself in line early.
Yeah.
You have to pay a ticket to go there.
Yeah.
And actually, you have a little bit of a discount if you're willing to go all the way up by steps without using the elevator, because the elevator will take you till a certain point, and then
and
inevitably,
still lots more.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can go to the roof of the nave with the elevator, and then you have to climb the stairs up that big dome.
Exactly.
And you go between the dome, because Michelangelo designed a dome
within a dome.
You're
going between the shells, right?
So you're between the shells, and you almost have to bend to your right as you arc up the spiral staircase. It's a long way up, and you get this. One of the highlights for me is the railing where you look out over the church from high above. And you see the little tiny people just buzzing around down there, and you can just feel like,
yes, us little ants. Yes.
They built this 500 years ago, and then you get to the very top and you pop out. And Nina, you've just got an incredible view. What do you see?
No, it's amazing. You can see all of Rome down towards the river, so you get the sense of Bernini's Piazza and then Castel Sant'Angelo in the distance, and it's a fantastic view. Absolutely.
So if you have the time and the energy and the endurance, it's really exciting.
I would say that's a highlight moment.
I don't go to a lot of top of spires these days, you know, but that's one that I go to. It's really worth it. It's really, really good. And then you can also go down into the crypt. And that's
where
so many important popes from long ago are buried. So lots of stuff to see and experience in the Basilica. But then everybody wants to go to the Vatican Museums, and that's plural, because it's a collection of different museums, and you walk around the country. If you don't have a reservation in advance, you're going to waste hours and you're going to get sunburned. You just got to get a reservation in advance. You can't do that for the Basilica. You just wait in line for the security and go early to make it minimal or late. But for the Vatican Museum, it's tough. Get a timed entry, and then you get in and it's all yours. And Nina, there's kind of a stampede route, right? Most people just do sort of the predictable thing.
Right. Most people walk down the straight galleries that take them sometimes with the shortcut or sometimes the long way to the Sistine Chapel. A lot of people who go there only want to see the Sistine Chapel and are maybe not interested in everything
else. At a minimum, if that's you, wait a minute. Hold on. You got to see the ancient Greek and Roman statues.
Yes.
You got to see the Grand Hall with all the maps.
Right.
You should take a look at the modern Christian art, I think. Maybe not. Okay, that would be stretching. But you got to go to the Raphael rooms, which are amazing. And then the finale would be the Sistine Chapel. Now, that's what probably 80% of the tourists do, just exactly what we laid out there. You could take that away, and it would still be a world-class museum. What would you have beyond that, Susanna?
Well, you know, for me, one of the thing that people visit the less, and it's understandable in a way, is the Egyptian and Etruscan part, which is very interesting because Egyptians people were interesting people of the past, and Etruscans, they're our ancestors.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have to think that out of the seven kings of Rome, I believe that three or four, they were from...
Rome was originally an Etruscan town.
Exactly. So what I'm trying to say here is that there is so much, and I understand that the time and the energy is limited, but I think that we should try, and even though you don't have the energy to do that, try to do a little peek in the Pinacoteca. Very few people go there.
I was wondering, Nina, how did the Vatican amass such an amazing collection of art?
That's a really important point to make because people forget that this started out as the private collection of the Pope, who at the time was the monarch of Rome. So this is a private monarch's collection that in the beginning was shown to very few. So VIPs would come to see the Pope and he would show them his collection. And it started all during the time of the Renaissance when Rome was getting a facelift and they were digging for foundations of buildings and finding these ancient Roman sculptures. And here was a place to display it.
And the Pope gets it. And
right.
He gets a lot of gifts from people that want to win his favor.
Exactly. And so the collections have grown and grown
grows
and grown.
And grows. And you'll see the obvious stuff. You'll see the Pinacoteca, like Susanna mentioned, the painting gallery. Downstairs, next to the cafeteria, is a carriage museum for the Pope's carriages over the centuries. And that's been really interesting. The ancient Roman Christian art. A lot of people don't realize that 200 years of ancient Rome was Christian. There's wonderful Christian art from the 300s and 400s. And there's so much more that you can see at the Vatican Museum. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about visiting the Vatican with two Rome guides. We're joined by Nina Bernardo and Susanna Perucchini. You know, Nina, 2025 is the every 25 years festival year in the Catholic Church, the Jubilee year declared by the Pope. What does that mean for the faithful, and what does it mean for people who want to visit Rome during a Jubilee year?
So for the faithful, knowing that it's coming up, they've been preparing for a long time because every 25 years, maybe once in their life, they're going to have a chance to make this pilgrimage. And if they come to Rome and are truly repentant of their sins and they walk through one of the holy doors, then they will be forgiven of their sins. So for some people, this is truly a spiritual event and they've been planning a long time to come. Rome is going to get a lot more visitors. And other people who are coming to Rome for other reasons are going to be there. So it's going to be incredibly crowded all throughout this year.
So let's talk about crowds just in general, because Rome is one of these cities in Europe that is over-touristed. And everybody wants to go at the same time. They want to avoid the heat of the summer, and they don't go in the dead of winter. So they go in the spring or the fall, and they want to go to the same five or six sites. And these can be quite crowded. What is a good strategy you have for helping tourists manage the crowds, Susanna?
Well, I would say, since many, many people will be there, to try to be early or whenever possible, a little bit later. So if we're talking about, for example, museums, you know, and some museums such as you just mentioned, you know, the Vatican Museums, you need to have a reservation. You can even decide to book one of the later of the day, like I believe that till 5 is the 5 p.m., the last entrance, and that would give you 2 good hours.
Yeah. Nina and Susanna, there's so many dimensions of the Vatican, and you guys have gone there so many times. What is one little angle on the Vatican that you just get the most joy out of sharing as a guide?
Well, I would say when we are outdoor and we cross the pinecone courtyard, that it's an open space, has the ancient pinecone. So this pinecone, which is 12 feet big, tall, used to be one of the decorations. We don't know exactly what it was decorating, but it's a symbol of fertility. You know, you have lots of seeds inside. And so it was always considered a symbol of fertility. On the other side,
way back in ancient times.
Way back in ancient Roman times.
And it looks like it's made out of gold. I mean, it's quite striking.
It is striking. And on the opposite side, in the middle of the courtyard, you have this contemporary art rotating sphere by Pomodoro. So you can see the two sides of the coin, the contemporary art and the ancient art, in the same space.
I love that. A reminder that you've got that ancient foundation and the living institution today.
Absolutely.
I suppose there's no accident they put them together. Nina, how about you as a tour guide? What do you particularly enjoy giving to your guests?
I'm going to piggyback on that because I also love this combination of ancient and modern, but it's the Modern Art Gallery in the Vatican Museums, and it's the place people are so tired by then, they blow through it to get the Sistine Chapel. But if you just go off, you can be all by yourself in front of a Dalí or a Francis Bacon. And if you look above, you have ceilings that have been painted by Pinturicchio 500 years ago. So got this wonderful combination and all to yourself.
And as you said, you're at a point where everybody's exhausted and the sign says, direct to the Sistine or to the Sistine through many halls of modern Christian art. And not many people are going to go to the modern art, but it is worthwhile. And it is fun to look at all of these painters that you've thought of in modern art terms and see what their association with the
with religious
Church
art.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Let's finish our discussion just for a couple minutes talking about great sites in Rome that would make Rome great for a visit, even if we didn't go to the Colosseum and the Forum and the Vatican.
Nina. So I think if you want something papal palace related, the Galleria Doria Pamphili or the Palazzo Barberini. Pamphili and Barberini were two papal families. They each produced a pope, and so they have these wonderful palaces filled with art. Almost nobody there.
So Doria Pamphili, and that's right in,
right
in front
near
of the Victor Emmanuel.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Right in the Corso. It's like you're going to walk right by it. And it is a wonderful aristocratic palace.
Exactly.
And the Lord
and the Pamphili
the
family is still around.
Mr. Pamphili made the audio guide, and he takes you on a personal walk through it. I just was there, and I just love that audio guide. And then
the Palazzo Barberini, which is not far from the Trevi Fountain.
Uh-huh.
And it's got another amazing collection of art. It's got a Caravaggio and a Raphael.
Uh-huh.
And the Palazzo was designed by some of the most important architects of the Baroque era.
So important when we're going to Rome to have the help of somebody else's experience. You guys are great. Thank you so much for helping us understand the Vatican and the challenges of visiting Rome. Nina Bernardo and Susanna Pertichini, buon lavoro.
Grazie.
Grazie.
There's a simple technique for opening a bottle of champagne so you don't make a mess or frighten the cat. Guides from France join us to tell us how. And we'll revisit our favorite Scottish traditions for greeting the new year. It's just ahead on Travel with Rick Steves.